mean,
Yeah.
I thought about the conversation. Probably we're gonna talk about a lot of things that are very, very interesting. Just last week, a couple of nice models came out, specifically in text-to-speech.
Okay, great. So yeah, mention those. That'd be very interesting. Okay. If
Absolutely.
you're ready, I'll do a little warm up and then we'll jump in. Okay.
Let's go. I'm ready when you're
Great.
ready.
Hello, and welcome to Globally Speaking podcast. I'm Matt Hardy. I'm the head of AI products at AWS, and I'm joined here today by Gil Hetz, VP of AI at Aola, a company at the forefront of automated speech recognition and speech generation. Welcome, Gil.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very, very, very well. Thank you very much. Looking forward to our discussion today. I think we're going to dive into all sorts of things, speech AI related. So what's going on? Maybe explain a little bit about that, how it's driving the evolution from text-based interactions to more conversational speech-based interactions, and how that translates, what it means for real-world workers. So that's our scope for today. Looking forward to learning something myself, Gil. So let's get started. Maybe you could give us a kickoff by introducing yourself, and what Aola is all about.
Absolutely. So, hi everyone. My name is Gil Hetz. I'm leading the AI at Aola. And basically, what we are doing, we're solving problems of speech. Okay. Speech is definitely the most easiest way of communication. But when we are talking about AI, and everybody is talking about AI today, speech is not there yet. I mean, right now, we are seeing the wave of speech coming into the picture with all the agents and after the revolution at the LLM side. But definitely what we understand is that speech is going to be the future of communication between human, machine, human, humans. And that's what we are doing and what we are focusing on at Aola. So Aola is basically a company that provides solution based on speech for enterprise when we understand that the jargon is going to be a problem, accent is going to be a problem, and background noise is going to be a problem. And that's things that we are trying to solve. And building models around it to make sure that we can solve that. Making sure that we are taking all the advantage that we've already seen in LLMs and genetic AI and integrating the solution itself.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Gil. Well, that's a really full introduction to what you do. And I certainly have many questions based on that intro. I expect our listeners do as well, but that sort of sets the scene very nicely. So I think a nice place to start would be, there's, as you said, like LLMs, there's incredible buzz. The last 24 months has been entirely taken over the technology agenda by this incredible emerging technology. And we've all learned how to use it. What are the strengths and weaknesses? How do we interact with it best? And what we're seeing now is very much a move to replacing those mundane tasks. Really good use of this conversational interaction is that you can, rather than having to go to an app, click through 17 different menu items, input a load of data, get one thing done, repeat to get another thing done. These things are coming together into agents, which is a really nice use of this conversational intelligence. But I'm interested, so that's very much text-based at the moment, right? The cutting edge, or the what we're familiar with in terms of how we interact with these interfaces, tends to be text-based. But your game is all about speech. Can we imagine a future, a near future, where people just talk to their devices instead of just typing and tapping?
Yeah, so actually I read the other day the book. I don't know if you're familiar with it. A brief is, how is it called? Well, man, let me just remind myself this book. A Brief History of the Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari. It's basically telling what is the advantage of humanity against, you know, the other, and why we involve ourselves. And one of the things that he's mentioning there is that what really separated us apart from other species is the ability to communicate, right? So back then we were able to communicate, and, you know, not only just described, hey, there is a danger far away from here, but hey, there is a danger like 200 meters from here, and it's probably the lion doesn't see me, so I can still run away. Okay, that's a different way of communication. And the fact that we were able to communicate between not only between one person, but between a group of people, really separate us apart. And that's, over the year, was the easiest way to communicate. Now we use language to basically build those rules and make sure that we can actually communicate between others. But when it came to machines, everything was still very, very structured, because you couldn't really describe to the machine what is the problem, hoping that it is going to understand you. Now the LLM and everything around it came, and the ability to understand changed, right? So right now, when you are talking to LLM, it's not only to extract the information, it can actually really managing the context and understand a way more than what it could a few years ago. But still, getting to the point that they understand you still need to go through a process of converting the speech into text, right? And that's really the big task that we are having right now. So the fact that we are actually seeing all those agents that are text-based are, sorry for that. Let me just close the notification here. Sorry for that. Just turn it off. So the fact that we can actually see that all the agents are text-based, and definitely can, we have a huge improvement there, telling us basically that we still have another leap to make on the speech itself. So we need to make sure that we can take the speech and convert it into text in a way that the other model that is dealing with understanding is going to take it to there. And the problem, and this is probably the challenges that, you know, everybody that in the speech field deal with, is to understand specific jargon, to understand different accent. You have your accent, perfect accent in English. I have a different accent, right? So when it comes to letters like B and P, when you are saying it, the signature is different from what, how I pronounce it. Now, when it goes to a speech model, it's really hard to identify. So we are building models really to be able to deal with those kind of signatures between phonetic significant. And we are looking for a solution that's really integrate accent, background noise, and jargon.
Yep, that's great. So, yeah, several routes I want to come back to in what you talked about there, but let's pick up on that last piece. You know, if you're going to move to speech as your interface, then there are a lot of things which are messy about speech. You know, highly structured data is one thing. Then we moved to more conversational text, but still it's more structured than speech, which has all sorts of other messiness, right? You mentioned accents, you mentioned jargon, you mentioned background noise, which is, I believe, one of your key use cases. We'll come to that later. So how are you at Aola dealing with that? What's the complexity? How are you addressing those things so that you can make a standardized, I guess you're looking to standardize all of that disparate ways of speaking and standardize into that, into something which the machine can then call, you know, I can now work on that, and I can work on that in a consistent way.
Yeah, exactly. So in general, what we are doing, instead of working with one model, we're actually working with a couple of models at the same time. One of them is in charge on the keyword spotting, which is basically identifying the jargon itself. Mm-hmm. The other model is we have a VAD system that is actually in charge on understanding where to send the sentence to the model or the batch, the audio file to the model. And that is helping when we are talking in the background noise and understand where to actually stop the information and send it to the model and then collect it. And the ability to integrate background noise into the data itself that we are using to train is also a huge impact that we have in order to basically solve this problem. So we also integrate this background noise when we are generating data. And the fact that, you know, when you are talking right now, when we are talking, if there is a background noise behind you, you're probably going to speak up. And many times that people are trying to integrate background noise into the samples that they are using, they don't match it, meaning that they just do a simple superposition to make sure that they integrate the background noise. But in general, what you have to do, and you need to build a model for that, is the ability to take this background noise and to change the signature of the speaker to adjust to the background noise. So that's pretty much another component that we have for the training models to make sure that we can actually generate better data.
Yeah, maybe for the skill, we can shine a bit of light on how users would use this. Why is background noise an issue? You know, you and I are sitting here, we've done a sound check, you know, all of our mics and audio is working great. But I was talking to a big chip manufacturer a couple of weeks ago, and what they're doing is, you know, taking their chips and putting them into white goods, into washing machines and refrigerators, and they're putting them into factory environments. And, you know, one of the key points there is that nobody wants their washing machine to not work when their internet is down. Nobody wants to base their maintenance of their factory on their internet connection. So looking to bring a lot of this technology onto the chip. But I think that those use cases are very relevant for you, right? So if you imagine, you know, your workspace is the factory floor, or your kitchen, or your utility room with your white goods, you know, there isn't a keyboard necessarily. The screen is probably this big, not this big, right? So the opportunity to type and have that dialogue is very limited. And if I'm working in a factory, chances are it's going to be a very noisy environment. So maybe you could add a little bit of color here. We talked about how text and typing is essentially the norm today. You described how speech is the future. What industries are really pushing that, Gil, that you're seeing? And, you know, describe a use case or two to bring some color to that.
Yeah. So first of all, you know, when what we are doing right now, and in general, the ability to transform information in speech is three times faster than any other, at least three times faster than any other communication form. So that's by itself is why people actually want to go to there. And the ability not only to transfer information, but also the amount of information you are passing is bigger. So by itself, it's a huge advantage. Now, as you said, you know, when I go, specifically when you go, and I'll give you a couple of examples. When you go to production line, what I want the people on the ground to do is basically to do their job, to make sure that they are running the inspection and not trying to fill up a form, right? I just want them to speak naturally of what they see. Mm-hmm. And then report on that. And when you do that naturally, then you can actually get into a point where your eyes are focused on the process itself and not on filling out a form or a checklist or whatever it is. So this is by itself, including what I said, actually is going to increase production very much, and we have seen that. Now, I want to take you to a couple of challenges that we had, and I think what we discovered like 5 years ago when we started in the first production line. So, you know, we built the model and we went down to the to this company at Australia. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an English, but it's difficult English.
Sure.
Right? And then we tested, everything looks very good at the lab. And we went down there and we gave them the first product. And, you know, the amount of background noise that they had there and the basically the different accent that they are using, and even mm-hmm. there, though that they are all from the same region, they still spoke a little differently. So the results at the beginning were not that great, and we used a off-the-shelf solution for that. And then we realized that if we really want to solve this problem of background noise and different accents and jargon, which was the first and foremost big problem that we had there, is to really integrate it inside the model. And that's where we decided to start building our own models to solve it. Now, giving that with the ability to speak naturally is definitely going to increase your production. We see that in so many examples. So many examples, different fields, different languages. At the end of the day, if you can integrate that and people have the confidence that the results that they are reporting are good, then you change something.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So are there, you mentioned manufacturing there, are there industries which are taking to this more quickly? Where are you seeing successes in this or real momentum starting to build?
So we definitely see a lot of momentum in any production lines, starting from, food manufacturing and car manufacturing. So we do a lot of progress there. Retail, we see a lot of attention there because mm-hmm. people are actually going every day for inspection at the fridge. And they do see, they need to measure temperature, for example, in different locations a couple of times a day. And if you just go in and report them very quickly, this is a process that saves you time. They also have all the information collected into one area, which not necessarily the case when you are using different form of information or collecting mm-hmm. information. So that area where we do see a lot of progress. Jewelry, we see a lot of interest in this area where people really need to run a couple of forth and back processes between the order of the jewelry to produce it and then to make sure that you adjust everything in the right place. So when you change this process to be with voice, you're actually saving a lot of time. And many of the, because we do it real time, everybody in the process can see the information when it's generated.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You mentioned real time and speed a few times here, right? So, you know, you mentioned that speech became the way to communicate because it's the most efficient way of telling you, Gil, that there's a lion over there and we should probably head up this tree. You said that there's, you know, essentially three times quicker at interacting with your PC than it is typing. How important is that real-time aspect to the adoption of speech and the use cases that you've been talking about?
This is a game changer. Actually, this is where we, I think the entire technology is trying to focus, right? Even when you're going to, so I'll break it up to different aspects, but I'll start actually in not in the speech. When you are using your LLM, when you are typing in your ChatGPT and you're asking questions, you don't care. The only thing you want to get is the answer, right? And you want it as quick as possible. And if you are not getting your answer, you're going to say, it's crap. I'm not going to use it. The same here for speech. So when we are talking, so I look at you and I see that you are moving your head and, you know, you give me some response. That's basically an indication that I said something, got to your head, and I got your response. Yep. If you are not responding, if it's slow, then all the process is starting to be slow. And at the end of the day, people are not going to see any advantage in that. So the fact that you are actually need to do everything real time is super important. And when it comes to speech, that's what I said about the VAT system. You really need to make sure that you are sending the information to the model to make sure you're starting to process it. I don't want to say the entire... So when I talk to you right now, I'm going to talk for 20 seconds. Okay, I'm going to say something for 20 seconds. But when I'm speaking, I'm going to break it up into 5-second sentences. Okay, so you are getting all these five, or you are actually processing it in real time. But you want the model to get it not after 20 seconds. You want it actually to get it every piece of what I said. And that's what we need to make sure, right? We need to make sure that we are actually collecting this information real time and we're responding very fast.
Yeah. To that ultimate in real time, does that mean that we need to, I'll ask you that in a different way. Can you achieve that real time processing, that latency which is built into the cloud? Can you achieve that with the cloud, or is this technology which needs to move to the edge where the users are?
Yeah, that's a great question. And eventually, I think a lot of the models, at least for the converting the speech into text, are going to move to the edge device. We're working on making those models smaller so you can actually put it there. But we also see that in the LLM side, right? The SLM models are smaller, so we can actually move them to the edge. But in general, even now with the cloud, we see a good latency. For us to process speech is about 150 milliseconds, which is very, very good in that sense. And we're working on improving that. There are a couple of things that you can do to improve that. First of all is to make your model smaller. Of course, you can pay with accuracy unless you know how to fix it, or to make the machine that you are running on stronger, right? So that's, again, trade-off with budget and money. But I think right now, specifically when you are moving to conversational, okay, it's not only I am pushing information back to the system, I actually want to get a response, whether it's speech or text, I want to get it. So there are a couple of models that are actually integrated in the process. So you need to make sure that you're not wasting time there as well.
Yeah. So let's add another layer of complexity. So your models are listening. They're understanding, they're figuring out where you're using particular jargon, you're balancing for background noise, you're being tolerant of different accents, etc. The thing which is close to our heart at RWS is about localization and running systems in multilingual. How do you view that in what you're doing? How important is it to run these things outside of English? How far can you move through the other languages?
Okay, so in general, our model is, the model that we're using is multilingual, supporting different languages. But let's say you want to add a new language to the system that you don't have. So there are basically two options here. Either you're going to go and fine-tune your model, including the data set, which including another set of training, which could be a little bit long, or you can, for this specific language, you can train the model for that. In general, we try to work multilingual, so adding languages to the model, the big model that we're using, and making sure that it is there, because we don't want to serve or maintain so many models.
Yeah.
The fact that we're actually using zero shot for the keyword spotting, allowing us to have one model and maintain it, right? So you don't want to go and maintain a model in Japanese and then another model in Spanish and another model in English. You want to keep everything in one place and the ability to make sure that you can adjust that. One thing that I want to say is that, you know, we hear people are talking right now to audio, or don't you even need to go through the to the text level? And this is my take, at least for now, with all the technology that we have around it. At the end of the day, your ability to take the text model, the LLM model, that essentially is going to process the information that you need. So the ability to adjust it is super important for the process. And if you are not going through that, you probably, basically what it means that is that you need to adjust the entire process itself to a specific, to the entire block, the three models that you are using, to a specific process. And that's probably going to take more time. So at this point, I certainly prefer to have multilingual, deal with all the text, the speech to text in one block, having your understanding model in the text in one block, and having your your speech back model in one block.
Yeah, I get the same questions, Gil. So, you know, audio to audio, video to video, why are we not using that? Because you can do that, right? There are lots of ways you can do that and get something which is very fluent and very sounds very persuasive. I think what you've mentioned, I absolutely agree, what you lose is control and consistency. And when in your game, you're looking to then drive very, very specific and repeatable and consistent actions out of a million different ways that someone might speak the same request, then that's, I assume, a big part of your musts when you're looking at your software.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Gil, I think we've covered very nicely the what, okay? So, you know, that's really great to get a deep understanding of how, of what solution it is that you're providing in terms of making a speech interface to LLMs a reality. But maybe we could touch on now the why. From a business perspective, what boost does this technology give to an enterprise in terms of increased productivity, accessibility? What's the business drivers which your customers are interested in solving with this sort of solution?
Yeah, so, you know, I think when it comes to the boost that we are bringing, as you said, productivity is number one because value brings value. I mean, we don't want to be in a place when you don't bring value. And if you are not saving money and if you're not making money for the company that you are actually providing the solution for, there is no room for you at this point of the, you know, the situation of the world. People really split it into a must-have solution to nice-to-have solution. Everything that is nice to have,
yeah,
that, you know, the atmosphere that we live in right now is not that important. So everybody's looking for the must-have, and if you're not showing value, and how you can actually save money, you're not in the game. And that's the number one priority. But we also see that reality is AI. And people are really trying to bring the AI to the fingertips of all the workers. Now, I am a data scientist. You have your own background, and you definitely love models, which is amazing. But at the end of the day, the models that we are building are not only for those people that really understand them, is for those people that need to use them and to take advantage of them. So the ability that we are actually bringing the speech into the front stage is that we actually give people that, you know, not necessarily know how to write code to be able to work with AI. And that's, I think people, that's the shift that companies, enterprise are doing right now. And that's why they're actually seeing a huge impact of the technology of the speech and the fact that they actually give it to the users to make sure that they can produce more and definitely it is going to be easier for them to report and do their job. One important thing is that we are collecting information that no one would collect in any other process, because when you are speaking, you are providing much more information, and the fact that we're actually moving through the different blocks, we can save it in a structured way. And when you save data in a structured way, you know where you can take it from there, right? So basically to any trends and everything that the human eyes cannot see and planning and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So yeah, I hadn't thought of it that dimension. There's a lot more data to collect, I assume, in how you're speaking, the prosody of my interaction with the LLM all makes a difference in terms of how it collects context for doing the right, or interpreting me correctly and then doing the right action. It's another interesting point, Gil, about the data. So I was reading about the move from SEO to AI optimization. So at the moment, everybody, you know, understands the terms of SEO and modifying that and optimizing that to make it your website's findable and searchable and indexed by the providers, so that, you know, the next 1,000 people can tap into their engine and out comes your website. Understanding is that, you know, today all of that is human based, but the future is that it's going to be AI. It's going to be LLMs which are reading these things, and so the data which needs to be structured will be completely different. You're nodding. I think you agree. Where do you think that is applicable to? So,
you know, data? Matt, I want to say my grandson, but I'm not sure. It's not my son. Probably your grandson, my grandson. Maybe they're gonna look at our garage and gonna say, "What is this box with all these letters that you have there?"
These tiny buttons. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what? What is it? Oh, this is how we actually used to talk to machines. It's like, what? What is it? What is it for? No, I think, you know, that's the difference. I mean, that's everybody at the end of the day. What we have seen in the last few years about the ability of LLMs to understand us actually opened the gates for us to be really ready for communicating with machine, that you're going to go to your fridge and you're going to ask, "Hey, what do I need to buy?" without even opening it. And you're going to get all the response. You're going to talk to the machines the same way we did 7,000 years ago to when we start communicate between us, between people.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're right on that razor's edge, right, between the old world of text and the future of, or the very near future of interacting with a whole new user experience. How do you and Iola think about the future? What's next? What will we be talking about if you and I sit down in a year or two and have the same conversation?
So first of all, I hope it's going to be you and not your agent. But
me too, girl. I need to put food on the children's table here.
In general, I think we are going to have a conversation with machine fluently. They're going to understand us, and they are not going to just collect the information for us. They're actually going to, we are going to make them to be active by voice command. And we can give, we probably, and this is actually not too far from here. I would say actually at the end of this year, maybe next year, we're going to see machines that are actually making complex tasks that can actually control other machines by voice, mm-hmm. And communicate back to us. It is going to impact a lot of what we are doing. I think that not too far from now, we are going to see one person who used to be a front-end engineer running a group of agents that are going to write code for him in no time. We already see that, but it's still text-based, and it's going to be a voice-based. So that's what it
is. Yeah.
Everything is going to be, all the communication between machine and people and back is going to be by voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing which is implied by that is that the human still has a very valid role in business and in all aspects of our life, right? I was reading this morning, Sam Altman over at OpenAI has backtracked a little bit on his ambition. So he used to talk about how AI will replace engineers. Okay, and what he's talking about this morning, I read, he saying, you know, AI will rapidly increase the productivity of engineers. So we shouldn't be looking at how we save on hours. Rather, we should be looking at what more can we get done in those same hours with those same people, because there's something magical, let's say, about what humans can bring to these processes. And you know, you think about the hype cycle, you know, when everyone was racing up the first steep hill and getting super excited about the hype, you know, we were going to go and decimate support teams and now engineering teams and all, you know, creative teams as of a few weeks ago, right? I think what we're all maybe coming to understand as we level off and come out into a plateau, we understand that actually AI is going to help us to do more, not to do what we do today with fewer people. And there's a big revolution here.
Yeah, I think so. I think I agree with you. What I think we do still better than AI is to see things that are not exist.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the difference is now that we have all these tools with AI together faster than what we used to do before it, right? So, but in general, that's, I think, still something that is going to be our advantage over AI. And hopefully we are going to work with that, you know? So,
yeah. Yep, absolutely. Well, listen, Gil, this has been a fascinating conversation. This is probably a really good place to leave it, because we've reached a place looking into the future. We've dealt with the bleeding edge, and now you're looking onto the next horizon. So thank you, Gil, for your time today. It's been fascinating to look at this revolution in terms of the user experience and how we move to something more natural and more productive for speech. Thank you. And I hope our listeners have enjoyed the conversation as well, and they've learned as much as I have. And I hope that you will all join us again next time for another episode of the Globally Speaking podcast. Thank you, Gil.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.